have passed away. Even in even after the Skylars have passed away, you would have not seen these buildings. Instead, you would have seen open, rolling pasture land with hedges, trees, cattle grazing, sheep grazing.
Thank you.
You could have seen all the way down to the Hudson River itself and across to the other shore. At this point, it's a little bit closer today than it would have been a little bit closer at the time than it is today. Couple of hundred yards, basically about where you see that tall brick building out there. Everywhere where the Port of Albany is today, that would have been water at the time. The Port of Albany is built on filled-in land extending out into the river. So the river is narrower and deeper than it was in the 18th century.
So if I was visiting Skylar's back in the day when they lived here, how would I put it?
If you're visiting the Skylar's at that time, let's say that you're coming up from New York City, you're probably going to come up by boat. It's the easiest way to travel at the time, much easier than the roads between here and New York. Ben Franklin travels by carriage from this house to New York City at one point and says that even with the skill of his coachman, he was nearly shaken to bits along the stony roads. So instead, you want to come up by boat. You come up the river. This would be the very first house that you would see when you arrived here in Albany, because the city was still 3/4 of a mile north of us. So the first house you see is the Schuyler's home. You're already starting to go, Albany, the Schuyler's. This is a prominent family in this area, and starting to make those connections. When you come to visit the house itself, if you're coming up by water or by carriage, your boat would dock at the ferry house or at the docks here in Albany, and then you would probably come by carriage or horse. You might walk, but more likely you're being driven or riding out here. And there's going to be a carriage house down at the very bottom of the hill here. This is where you're probably going to actually be dropped off right in front of the door, but then your carriage is going to be taken there. There's going to be a pathway bringing you up to the front of the house. You'd actually enter straight in through that front door there. So we're headed in through the back today, but we're going to start in that front hall, which would have been the very first space you would enter when you came. It tends to think of itself as a free state. We fought for the Union during the Civil War. Slavery is legal in New York until 1827, meaning Philip Schuyler participates in this practice throughout basically his entire life in one form or another. While the family is living here, all of the work going on in this back courtyard is going to be being performed by enslaved servants and laborers. The household itself is going to be waited on, and all the housekeeping is going to be done by enslaved servants and laborers as well. Usually there's somewhere between 8 to 14 enslaved people here at any one time. During the summer months, our best guess is that they're living actually in this back courtyard, and they may have lived up in the attic in the winter, but Philip doesn't really leave clear records of where they actually live, simply kind of the working space associated with different tasks for the family. So back here, you would have had a kitchen and nursery building right over to the north. That's roughly where the flower bed is today. Those would be connected through a covered passageway into the dining room. Directly behind us, where this flower bed is, you would have had a public office. Philip is a landlord. Most of his money comes through land management and land speculation. So this is where he's going to meet with investors, or with lower-level investors, where he's meeting with people who are paying his rents. Prominent investors meet in the house, people who are arranging more mercantile or more utilitarian deals with him, he's going to receive them back here. There would be chicken houses along the back wall, working space of all different sorts, and the bathroom would be back here as well. They refer to it as the necessary, but it's more or less an outhouse, really fancy outhouse, just past where the light and tree are over here. The other term for the necessary at the time, you could refer to it as the House of Commons, you call it the Spice Islands, or the Temple of Easement. All of those are perfectly acceptable slang terms in the 18th century.
So what do you think? A room like this in the 18th century, if you live in Albany and you walk into this front hall,
Absolutely. It's impressive today, but to put this into perspective for the 18th century, this is what Albany looks like. You have small Dutch-style buildings, usually made of brick. Many of these are only going to be one or two rooms, and you're going to live your entire life in those rooms, cooking, eating, sleeping, socializing. You may have a loft above, or in some cases, a second floor. But for instance, this central home right here, that's going to be a single story with a storage loft above it. If you took two of these buildings, you could put them down the front and back hallway of the house that we're standing in right now. The Schuyler's home is about 10 times the size of anything else in Albany. I'd like to pass that around. Now, Philip and Catherine are both of Dutch descent, even though they're building this English-style home. You've got Philip Schuyler right here, Catherine Van Rensselaer Schuyler, and that portrait there. For both of them, Dutch is going to be the first language that they grow up speaking, but from childhood on, they are also learning English. Philip will also speak, English, Dutch, French, German, Latin, Greek, with some Greek, and has a familiarity with several Native American languages and dialects. Albany is very multicultural, and at this time period, you could stand on a corner in Albany and hear 11 different languages spoken at any one time. Pretty reliable. So they're land speculators and landowners. They have tenants who pay rent in the form of cash, crops, and labor, all at the same time. You pay cash rent, but you also give half of everything that you grow to this family, and you have to labor to make improvements on the lands that you're renting from them and other lands that they purchase. So all of the raw materials produced by this arrangement are needed in the Caribbean to feed the sugar plantations with food, with grains, but also with timber, with flax for textiles, hemp for rope making and textiles. You've got herring fisheries. Phillips Timber Mills can run 14 saws at a time. They're staffed with slave labor, so this is a very profitable enterprise for him. All these goods go downriver from New York City. They're sold to the Caribbean. That money comes back to the house, pays for this lifestyle. They're also going to be importing rum from the Caribbean, very popular at the time. And most of their slaves are going to be coming either from the Caribbean or second generation born in the Albany area. So it's just kind of this one long leg of that triangle, North Atlantic slave trade and that triangle trade value. Wonderful with that, you know, very diplomatic, but who also has a tendency to infuriate people. John Adams says on two different occasions that somebody really ought to shoot Philip Schuyler, and that it is in the best interest of national security, in fact, that somebody shoot Philip Schuyler. He and Adams never really saw eye to eye. There's 15 children born to them over the course of their marriage. Seven of those children will die before their first birthday, sadly. Catherine has twins and triplets, although very uncommon, but none of those children survive. And two of the eight children who do survive to adulthood will also predecease their parents. When Catherine dies and when Philip dies, only six of their 15 children survive them. These kids are born over the course of exactly 25 years. Their oldest and youngest child share a birthday. So you've got three daughters, Angelica, Elizabeth, and Margaret, sometimes better known as Peggy. Three boys, John Bradstreet, Schuyler, Philip Jeremiah, Rensselaer, and then two more girls, Cornelia. 25 years there between them all. Angelica is closer in age to her mother than she is to her youngest sibling by about 4 years. So does anyone have background questions? I replaced when they put an altar there. A lot of the woodwork up here has had to be restored. The other things lost in this room were the wallpaper, the carpeting, and the ceiling. But again, just like with the other rooms, we have receipts detailing what would have been in the room. And we have visitors' descriptions, so we're actually reproducing those this year. There's going to be a wall-to-wall carpet, probably a floral print wool carpet, a paper mache ceiling with a big medallion in the middle, and then a bright blue silk brocaded wallpaper or wall tapestry, wherever you see bare plaster. So the color scheme in this room is going to be pretty much blue and gold. Now these chairs that you see here with the shield backs, the sofa, set over here. Those are original chairs to this house and to this family. The Schuylers buy them in the 1790s, but the upholstery was lost for a very long time until they discovered a tiny little scrap of bright yellow silk underneath one of the arm pads on one of these chairs. And from what was left there, they were able to reproduce what they believe the sort of coloration of the that upholstery.
My name's Ian. I'm a historical interpreter here, and today we're going to be taking a look in the house, going through the house, really kind of room by room. One of the ways I kind of like to do this is almost acting as if we're visitors of the Schuylers. If you came here in the 18th century, what would your experience be like? What would you be seeing? Who would you be interacting with, and how would you be interacting with them in different rooms? So that's kind of the goal today. So let's head on inside and have an adventure back in time. So welcome to the house. So this is the front hall of the mansion. As a guest here in the 18th century, this would be the very first space that you would actually enter when you came to visit the Schuylers. Before this vestibule out here was added, now this space up here is added in about 1815 by one of the first families to live here after the Schuylers. But before that's added, you would have come up a staircase and into this hall. And this hallway is designed to make an impression. Just like you can see the house from the river, walking into this room is supposed to tell you something about the family. What they really want you to understand is that they're powerful, that they're wealthy, and that they're refined. So this would be the most formal room in the house in many ways. After being received in that front hall, sometimes maybe after a little bit of a wait, but eventually being received by the family, this is where you're going to come face to face with the Schuylers, really spend a little bit of time getting to know them. This is where Millard Fillmore is going to marry Caroline Carmichael McIntosh in the 1850s, a little bit later on, but much more famously than that, because nobody ever remembers Millard Fillmore. We've got Elizabeth Schuyler right here. She's the second daughter of the family. This is where she marries Alexander Hamilton on December 14th of 1780. This is the yellow parlor of the house. The name is pretty self-explanatory. Now, having a monochromatic room like this is the height of fashion in the 18th century. It's very difficult to achieve because while this house is under construction, Catherine and their family friend John Bradstreet are really going to be the ones kind of supervising that construction. Philip isn't here for the first 20 months or so. He's actually in England taking care of military paperwork. At the time, he's actually in the British Army. But while he's over there, he's buying textiles. He's buying stuff. He's sending back furniture, carpeting, wallpaper. And this means that he's seeing one end of the process, Catherine is seeing the other, and they somehow need to bring this all together. So yeah, this is one of my favorite rooms in the whole house. This library is a little bit smaller than it would have been at the time. You can see there are these kind of closet spaces over here. Those are built in the 19th century. They eat up a bit of the original layout of the room. But this library would have had bookshelves enough to contain 200 to 300 books at any one time. So very few people ever would have had open access to this room. Philip probably gives more or less open access to this room to his sons, though especially with some of the sons and with his daughters, he's probably recommending books out of the library and lending them to them. He does lend books to people on a regular basis. However, as far as getting open access to use this room unaccompanied whenever you want, pretty elite group. So this is the dining room of the house. However, this room is only really used as a dining room a little bit later on. Probably early 1790s moving forward. Before that, this may have actually been a bedchamber. Probably goes through several different uses at different times. So as we head up here, we're going to walk up here into the salon. This would be a room used for dancing and for music. Other large-scale social functions, for instance, you could potentially put your musicians over here, leaves this whole open area open for dancing. So we got the boys' bedchamber right over here. The boys are very, very close together in age. So while they're all kind of using this room at about the same time, they're also not always here. They're going to be going to boarding school. Philip Jeremiah's case. They're going to be spending time up at the Saratoga property, learning how to manage land and how to manage the family business. So we've got the girls' bed chamber over here. This room likely would have had a yellow wallpaper as well at the time. We're still working on reproducing that. However, all five of the girls would have used this room. But unlike the boys, who were basically born boom, 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 right in a row, the girls had that 25-year age spread. This means that when the family moves into this house, the three oldest girls have already been born. They're going to be growing up in here using this space. Then you're going to have a pretty lengthy gap before you have Cornelia and then eventually Katie in this room. The reason I like this room so much, this is Philip and Catherine's bedchamber. And a lot of times if somebody were to ask me, all right, I've got time to see one room of the house, what can you show me where you can cover every aspect of the family in one space? This is it. This bedchamber would have been for Philip and Catherine's private use, but it's also going to be a space that they give to their very best guests. So this space is where they're going to be hosting their very best guests. Now this can include hosting for meals. For instance, we've got this table set up over here. The Washingtons dine in this room on several occasions. Other times though, the Skylars themselves will go and sleep in other rooms in the house, and they will end up giving this room entirely over to their guests. For instance, when Benjamin Franklin is here, he stays in this room. So after the Skylars pass away, with Philip's death in 1804, this house is going to pass through a number of different hands over the course of the 19th century. Eventually, it's going to become an orphanage from 1886 until 1914. At that point, we're actually sold to New York State. We begin the process of restoration. By 1917, October of 1917, we opened as a museum for the first time. Here we are 100 years later, still going strong and hoping for another 100 years. So thanks so much for visiting today. We're going to head out back, and if anyone has questions afterwards, I was happy to answer that. Thank you.
Welcome to Trinity Church Wall Street. My name is Phil Jackson. I'm the vicar here at Trinity. Trinity has been here in Lower Manhattan for almost 320 years. Many of our founding fathers were members of Trinity. One of our founding fathers, Alexander Hamilton, was also here at